Hello and welcome to edition 277 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We're here from the comfort of our own homes to bring you a review of the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, or as we like to call it, Imola. Also, it's going to be along with all the latest news, talking points from Formula 1, and a little look ahead to the next race in Portugal as well. I am Richard Baxter, hosting once again. And with me tonight, we have the 2 times Beccles Kart champion, the Oracle, Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening, Rich. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you? Your debut this season?
Yeah, first one of the season. Yeah, I'm all good. Yeah, and I apologise, I may call it the San Marino Grand Prix at 7 points this podcast. It's still the San Marino Grand Prix in my eyes.
It's San Marino, it's similar. Anything but Emilia-Romagna, it seems.
Exactly, yeah.
But no, I think everyone will forgive you for that. But but yeah, you've been okay? All good? Keeping well?
Yeah, all good. Working hard, so yeah, can't complain.
Yeah, that's all the usual this time of year. So
enjoyed the start of F1. It's been a good couple of races. So
oh, it really has.
Yeah,
been great. Yeah. Perfect start to an F1 season.
Exactly, yeah.
So we might as well jump straight into it, because there's a lot of talking points from this race again. We might as well start at the beginning. I mean, rain just before the start of the race. It was like the good old days in of Formula One. Remember, during the 90s, Murray's comms and stuff, and Martin on the grid. Oh, it's raining here down into turn one, but then it's dry around the back. I think like Hockenheim and Spa circuits like that. And, you know, this race was just one of those, wasn't it? It was just rain in some places, dry in others.
Yes, there's nothing better sort of half an hour or an hour before the race, and you sort of turn it on and you just sort of see those, you know, dark clouds in the distance, and they tell you that there's rain and it's heavy on one side of the track and it's not too bad this part, and you think this is just going to be a brilliant start to the race. And it always is. I think I remember, was it Silverstone? A good few years ago, and it was literally half the track was wet and half the track was completely dry.
Yeah, and that was probably about 2015 or so, I reckon.
Yeah, and I just love the teams are sitting there going, what do we do? Is it full wets, intermediates? Do we even risk it on dries? And it's, yeah, chucking a bit of jeopardy into a Formula One race, and it just, it all kicks off.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, of course, it kicks off on the formation lap, because old Charlie boy, Charles Leclerc, he had a little bit of a spin. He was lucky not to get stuck in the gravel almost as well.
Yeah, there's I've really forgot what those two corners are called.
There's Tozer, there's Tamburello, and there's Acqua Minerale. They're the three I remember from the whole track, and that's it.
I think it was the Acqua Minerale ones he spun it.
Possibly.
Did it come downhill? I can't remember. Yeah, it seemed really slippery at that point.
Yeah, he wasn't the only one who lost it there, of course, because Nicholas Latifi also, lap one, I think, he spun it in the same place.
Yeah.
And of course had a little adventure not long after that.
so I just say hello to Mazepin.
Yeah.
Over the hill. He does spin quite a lot, old Latifi, doesn't he? And then we sort of laugh at old Mazepin, but Latifi has a few spins, mainly in like practice and qualifying, isn't he? But
he's had a few. To be fair, he impressed me during qualifying. He made it through, looked pretty good, and did some good laps. He kind of this season seems to have stepped up a bit.
Yeah, because he's quicker than Russell in Q1 as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
because I think Matt Brundle on the commentary was getting excited because it's the first time that Russell's been. Well, he thought Russell's been the first time he's been out qualified in the Williams car, then sort of they're not realising that they're both through to to Q2. Got a bit too excited too early on that one.
Yeah, just a little bit. But it's understandable. But we'll jump straight into business again. And turn one, lap one, Max versus Lewis. Now, what were your thoughts on that?
I thought it was just good hard racing. I think Max got the better start, didn't he? So Hamilton was trying to fight back. And I think whenever you try and go around the outside of somebody, you're always taking a little bit of risk. You gave it a go, didn't quite work. And yeah, it's just good work from Verstappen. How about yourself?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It was good hard racing. I mean, I did a little bit of recording for commentary just live at the time. We might stick it in, we might not, we'll see. If we stick it in, it will be here.
The green flag at the back. One light, two lights, three lights, four lights, five lights, pause, go! And it looks like Hamilton's got away well. Verstappen already alongside his teammate and challenging Hamilton at the front. They're side by side. It looks like they're three wide here. No, Perez has pulled behind. It looks like Verstappen has the lead. Hamilton's on the outside. Can he try and hold on? Oh, they've touched. Now Hamilton's across the curb. And he's lost some bodywork there. I think it's the front wing. He bounced across the curb. He tried to hold on, but he couldn't.
But I said in that, basically, turn one, you can see the way Hamilton went into it. He was on the outside. He was, you know, side by side. Verstappen had the racing line. Hamilton should have just got out of it, really.
Yeah. It's one of those... Yeah, he probably should have done. I suppose he's quite lucky not to lose second position.
Yeah.
But I think he's probably just a bit annoyed that, especially when you start pole and Verstappen's third, you think, well, I should be ahead, at least be ahead of him going into the first corner. But yeah, it's just good hard racing between the two best on the grid.
Yeah, definitely. And that really set the tone for the race because there's hard racing throughout the whole grid. And, of course, we had a couple of safety cars. So, obviously, we mentioned the Latifi spin, and there's one of the safety cars right at the beginning. And the whole grid was close. But there's one thing I want to pick up on, because, obviously, Sergio Perez was third at that point. He might have dropped down to fourth. I can't remember saying that. But, yeah, he was third or fourth. He was up there still fighting. And under the safety car, he ran wide across the gravel. And yes. Danny Ric... And I think it was Gasly went through.
Yeah, he was fourth. Yeah, Leclerc was third, I think, wasn't he, at that point?
Yeah, that sounds right, yeah. And, yeah, so Perez ran across the gravel. Those two cars went ahead. Then Perez regained his position, and he got a 10-second penalty later on in the race for that. But watching the replays, I don't know if you noticed this, but it looked to me like Ricciardo slowed down to allow Perez to take the position.
Yeah, exactly what I thought at the time. Because when it happened, I didn't really think anything of it. And they said later on, I thought, oh, yeah, of course, you can't do that. But, yeah, because Danny Ric slows down quite a bit because Gasly comes sort of flying through, doesn't he? And he has to sort of...
Yeah, he had to hit the brakes and he was alongside. Yeah. And
they kind of, yeah, like I said, the gap between... You can't really see the Ferrari of Clerk ahead. And obviously, the gap is huge. And then I suppose Perez just goes, well... Okay, I'll take it back. So, obviously, Danny Ric didn't know the rule.
Yeah, it was a strange one.
Yeah, I thought exactly the same as you.
Hmm. That's right, because in which case it seemed almost a bit hard, a bit of a harsh penalty, in my opinion, for Perez to say, oh, you overtook. It's like, well, he did overtake under the safety car and regain position when he shouldn't have. But also, like, I'm sure fans all over the world know that rule and what the rule is, because... I mean, for those who remember 2009, the whole McLaren Liegate thing, where I think Trulli went off ahead of Hamilton, and Hamilton took position, and he was on the radio, and they said, "Oh yeah, let him through," and let him through. Then after the race, they were like, "Oh no, who overtook under safety car? You should penalise him."
Mm.
And then it was like, it was all lies and all that. And it's like, well,
yeah.
It reminded me of that because it was like, well, people know the rule, know that you shouldn't regain position unless you're literally told by the stewards. But he did. So, yes, penalty. But then also, Ricciardo slowed to let him.
Yeah.
A bit of a strange one. And similar to that, the second safety car period, or the kind of race restart, as it was, because the race restart after the red flag wasn't really under a safety car, technically. But rolling start, they said. But Verstappen had that kind of semi-spin. Leclerc, again, he could have gone past him, but he chose not to.
Yeah. There was probably enough time to... I suppose it's also one of those sort of things where you could give it a go and then tell the team to argue for you.
Yeah.
And then if there's any issues, then you give the place back. But yeah, it just seems that the drivers are a bit quite gentlemanly and just sort of like, oh no, you can come back here, mate, you know.
Mm.
It's a shame he done that. But it's interesting with the better Danny Ric one. If Perez had said, no, I can't go, I mean, would the gap just got bigger and bigger? And then would have Ricciardo been done for giving you too much of a gap between your car and the car in front of you, which I can't remember what the 10 car lengths?
Yeah, sounds right.
Something like that is the maximum you can leave between you and the car in front under safety car. So
it would have been interesting what they would have done.
Yeah. But yeah, it just seems that all the drivers under safety car were quite, gentlemen.
Mm. And it was something we did talk about this in our podcast WhatsApp group, and Dan Springle, who of course has a bit of experience around Formula One teams and everything, he said it might just be kind of a gentleman's agreement within the drivers that you don't take advantage of someone's mistake like that, unless it's, you know, really bad or something, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. But it was a very strange situation for those, I thought. But we've kind of already mentioned the red flag. We need to really go into depth with this, because this was one of the biggest talking points from the race. Now, first of all, the red flag itself, the restart, they decided, rather than having a standing start, because the track was slightly damp still, they'd do it, the restart behind the safety car and do it rolling. Now, for you, was this the correct decision, or do you think they should have done a standing start?
I was a bit torn, really, because entertainment, they should have done the standing start. But I suppose there's still some... There's only one line, really, wasn't it, into the first corner. So I suppose all those cars on dry tyres, half of them probably in the wet side of the track, it probably would have caused another accident, wouldn't it?
Mm.
So, I was a bit 50-50. For entertainment, I was like, definitely should be. Line up on the grid, and away you go again. But I suppose if you're racing, the race director, safety obviously a huge part of your job. I suppose you really had to do rolling start, I suppose.
Yeah. No. That was my thought process at the time. I was like, well, it has to be a standing start. If the track was safe enough to start the race in the wet, well, they should do it then. But like you say, when you kind of look at all the information with the kind of one dry line and stuff, it did make more sense that, the rolling start just to be safe. And we did see several times cars try and overtake on the wet bit and kind of run wide and things. So, that made sense.
As Tsunoda, I suppose, we tried, was it? Yeah, it was a restart, wasn't it? We tried to overtake Hamilton and just...
Yeah.
Too much in the wet and ended up in the gravel.
Yeah, I think that was, yeah. So that sounds right. But we need to dive straight into the real red flag moments as well, because this was a real dilemma for Mercedes. The TriStar team, Mercedes-Benz, the TriStar logo, of course, with their three Formula One stars of Hamilton, Bottas and George Russell. Norfolk's own George Russell, that is. But I think things got a bit... But I think it was lap 31, 2, 3. They all got a bit tasty, didn't they? So Hamilton catching Verstappen through the traffic. George Russell moved over to let him through. Hamilton goes through, but goes onto the wet, locks up and understeers off the track and doesn't have the space to spin round, damages his front wing. In the barrier, then reverses out of the gravel. And then as they go into turn one, George Russell, who's right behind Bottas, has a great run on him. And of course, an absolute shunt. Mercedes three drivers all having moments off track and, it was carnage, wasn't it?
Exactly. It was, I suppose, go back to the Hamilton running wide. I suppose because it was about a group of five cars that mid sort of pack that Verstappen was slowly made his way through, didn't he? Because the gap was just dropping, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously, Hamilton could see this and probably thought, if I can get through this pack quicker, then I'll be a lot closer on his tail and a decent chance of having a go at him. But I thought it was quite, in a weird way, Russell kind of led to the other two Mercedes being off track.
Yeah.
Because I suppose the first one, which is not his fault, he's just doing the right thing by getting out of the way, but the fact that where he got out of the way, when you're being let by, you kind of got to go by, haven't you? You can't, Hamilton in a way couldn't just really sit behind him and go, no, I'll follow you around the corner, because Russell would be going, like, well, what's going on here? And then he'd probably slow down further and then you'd end up going nowhere.
Yeah.
But he sort of, Hamilton kind of had to do it, I kind of thought, but he was just a bit, it's because he could have took it more carefully, but like I say, you can see the leaders, lost a lot of time, you're trying to get through the pack as well, you'll go for it. But he done well to get out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And Hamilton admitted afterwards it was his own impatience
that
really cost him there. Mm. But the Bottas Russell crash. Now, this for me was really frustrating because George Russell, as we know, is absolutely driving the wheels off that Williams. The Williams, which is quite an average car, to you know, not no disrespect to them, of course, but they're not a front running team. And for George to be running in the points and be keeping pace with, you know, being outright pace, he was matching Bottas.
Yeah.
Arguably quicker because obviously he was going for the overtake. Now, I think Bottas is a good driver. I think he's a quick driver. But so far this season, I mean, third place in Bahrain, he didn't really have to do anything, just keep going round. This whole weekend in Imola, he was nowhere, was he? He qualified eighth place.
Yeah. He had a decent Friday, I think, didn't he?
Yeah. P1, P2, I think he was pretty decent.
But from sort of Saturday, it was, yeah, went horribly wrong. That was probably obviously after the shock of the crash between Russell and Bottas, my next thought was like, what the hell is Russell trying to do? How is he allowed to try and overtake Bottas? What is going on with Bottas? But I look at the crash, I thought it was probably 60-40 towards Russell. His fault, but it was just, yeah, Bottas defending from Russell halfway through a race is not good for him. And then also it's a bit sort of onto Russell, and I suppose he's a bit unlucky, really, wasn't he? He's trying to make a move and got it slightly wrong, and in those conditions, slightly wrong on slick tires and damp track, it can look spectacularly wrong. I didn't agree with him obviously going up to Bottas and telling him what he thought. Although Bottas' reaction was quite funny, just putting his middle finger up while he's sitting in the cockpit. I think this seems to happen quite often, doesn't it? Russell seems to get in good positions, either in points or, you know, possibly win the race in Sakhir last year, which obviously wasn't his fault, but he seems to get in these positions and it all falls apart, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know,
he's going to get a few points with Williams and then crashes behind a safety car last year at Imola, didn't he?
Mm.
So you just don't want that to become a habit, really, do you?
No. And it's, for me, the thing that was interesting was, obviously since then, Russell has come out and apologised for his reaction and kind of said, you know, he feels stupid. And it's that the heat of the moment, you know, you sometimes say and do things that you know, might not necessarily be right. So fair play for him too, obviously, for apologising. But the thing that stood out to me was he was so quick down that straight to be there catching that fast.
Yeah.
And if both cars had got through, okay, he would have overtaken Bottas there.
Yes, yeah.
For track position. And Bottas seemed to be kind of struggling to overtake other people through the race. I think it was Gasly on his wet tyres. Bottas was stuck behind for a little while.
Yeah, it's hard to really remember, like, this is how he got on, but he didn't seem to make any progression at all, did he? He qualified eighth, didn't he, as you said. Was it ninth and tenth when they crashed?
I think so, yeah.
You're on eighth and ninth. So, yeah, roughly the same position. And we saw how well, obviously, Hamilton done to get through the pack later on the race against some quicker cars. It was just, yeah. It was just, yeah, a strange weekend for Bottas, being so good on the Friday. And they're all going, and he's pole there last year. Probably should have won last year, shouldn't he? He didn't have half the Ferrari wrapped around his car. Yeah, and as you said, if that move had taken place, it would have been a hell of a statement from Russell ahead of next year, whatever happens next year. It would have been a hell of a statement to say, look, I can overtake this bloke in a Williams. And he's in the full Mercedes. Yeah. Yeah.
Now this is where the dilemma comes in. So if you were Toto, and you were in charge of this team, and you had Russell, who's clearly quick, doing all he can to get in a front-running team, then you've got Bottas, who is a quick driver sometimes, but also has these moments where he kind of struggles on track and everything. And then you've, of course, got Hamilton, who's in a title fight. Or, you know, it's safe to say already, this is one of the almighty scraps we're going to have as a title fight. And you need, like what Red Bull need, that second driver there all the time as support. Now, if you were in charge of Mercedes, if you had this dilemma, what would you do?
What, for next year?
For whenever. What would you do?
I think for next year, I think I'm assuming Hamilton will still be racing next year. I would definitely have to go Hamilton and Russell. It may create a bit of fireworks. I don't know. But Hamilton is on, not on the verge of retiring, is he? It's going to happen in the next few years, you imagine. And you need that sort of lead driver to replace him. And if you don't give Russell the drive next year in Mercedes, he's probably going to go somewhere else, isn't he?
Yeah.
So I think you got to look to the future as well. I think Bottas is the perfect. So he's one of the perfect number two drivers, isn't he? He's obviously, apart from this weekend, he's often just behind. He's quick in qualifying. He picks up wins. He just gets on with it. How much he tries to say that he's Valtteri Bottas 2.0, 3.0. I'm going to be more selfish this year. You are who you are, aren't you? He is Valtteri Bottas, comes across as a nice guy, and he's a good team player. But I think, you have to go Hamilton.
Yeah.
Hamilton Russell for next year.
Yeah. I was speaking to some friends of mine, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised unless Bottas steps up and really starts getting in some, you know, really kind of race winning pole position lap times and performances. I wouldn't be surprised if we got to kind of Silverstone halfway through the season, Mercedes might start looking at their team and making changes. They might do a Red Bull. I think it would depend how the season's going and how the title scrap is going. But I think George is the age where you could still nurture him and say, be a number two to Hamilton, learn from him, but you know, make sure you do yourself proud. Whereas I think against Bottas, George's message is, I'm number one, like we saw in Sakhir last year.
Yeah, I suppose. It would be quite interesting to when they make the decision for next year. Because if they make the decision relatively early, say early summer, that Russell will be in the Mercedes next year with Hamilton, whatever, and that sort of, you then know it's going to happen. Sometimes in them sort of things, that sort of quickens up the process, because Bottas is sitting there going, well, obviously I'm out next year, and you've got a bloke doing really well in the Williams, and if Bottas's performances drop off, like I say, how easy it was to, relatively easy it was to get Russell in the car for that one race last year. Mm-hmm. He's on a bit of string, really, at Williams, isn't he? And I think whenever Mercedes want to pull on it, he comes back, doesn't he? But yeah, it'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, definitely. And while we're speaking of teams and teamwork and drivers working well, we have to mention McLaren quickly. Norris brought it home in third place. It's the first time since 2012 we've had two Brits on the podium. So a good look, you know, good long time since that's happened. Great to see Lando up there, but he wouldn't. Yeah. He arguably wouldn't have got there if it wasn't for Danny Ric and McLaren calling team orders and saying,
"Yeah,
let Lando go." Basically, Lando is faster than you.
Yeah, I mean, like, he was rapid all weekend, wasn't he? Mm. I mean, you go back to the qualifying, and he would have been third, wouldn't he? He had to run that a little bit wide, and by running that a little bit wide, he probably gained, well, at most a tenth, didn't he?
Yeah, it was hardly anything you'd gain from that, would you?
Wasn't even that. So he was rapid then, and then in the race, he was just early on, he was just picking people off. And I see, as you said, you got behind Danny Ric, and whenever you hear that, "Oh, I am faster," blah blah blah, you sort of, how much faster are you? That sort of question comes up, doesn't it?
And yeah.
And like I said, it's fair to, because, you know, they're early on in their, you know, rivalry as teammates. You're a new team, and Danny Ric, he wants to make statements early on. It was pretty generous of him to step aside, but I mean, Norris just pulled away from him easily, didn't he?
Yeah.
Gap was big early on.
He was absolutely flying, Lando was. He was really shifting.
And that's good for him. I mean, he's, a lot of the new drivers or the teams or the drivers that had changed teams over the winter seem to struggle sort of at the weekend or be slower than their compared to their teammates. But to be that much quicker than Danny Ric is, yeah, bloody impressive. And if he can keep that up, his stock in the F1 grid in the paddock will be pretty high. Because if you beat Danny Ric, yeah, you're pretty handy, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. Right. I think that pretty much wraps up everything from Imola. I can't think of anything that we've missed. So we're going to move on to Twitter, because last week we mentioned to people about Twitter and getting in touch, and we had Dan giving us his thoughts and opinions and everything. So we had several replies. So thank you guys for replying. We'll go through them now quickly. Not applicable on Twitter. He said, "Great podcast, guys. Only wish I would have heard about your podcast 275 episodes ago. A lot of catching up to do." Really nice comments there. Thank you so much. We're glad you're enjoying it. I hope you're making your way through those other 275. F1 fan 2. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was trying to think of some of our best podcasts over that.
Oh,
that time
we had a couple with Stuart Webber. We've had
true, they were good. Yeah,
we've had Jake Humphrey on.
Yeah,
I think they're all on Patreon. It's all listed, and I'm pretty sure it's listed on Audio Boom as well. Some of the best ones.
I think they were probably our best ones, are probably the most random ones when we go off at a tangent or
singing the Italian national anthem.
Obviously your commentaries as well, which, you know,
yeah, we try and keep those coming in. Obviously plenty more live reactions from other people as well.
Probably one of the best was the season review. I think it was in the Rush Cutters. We were in the middle of the restaurant and there was about eight of us. We got a round of applause from the rest of the restaurant.
that was good fun.
That's good fun. Yeah, plenty to go through.
Yeah, plenty. F1 fan 2, a bit of reaction. He said, "Hamilton the GOAT?" Question mark. So plenty of reactions there. And
Was he suggesting that like he's no longer the GOAT because he ran wide? Is that...
I don't know. But
bit harsh if he obviously... You know, your opinion on who the GOAT is can be any of the fine drivers in the history of Formula One, but he's in the top five of the GOAT list of most people, I imagine. But
oh yeah, definitely. And Debbie Wentick had quite a lot to say, so I won't read it all because there's about three tweets here. But they didn't agree with what Dan said. about Red Bull and the way they were doing their stuff. That's great. You know, Dan, this is obviously a podcast, everyone has their opinions, and it's great, Debbie, thank you for reaching out with yours. And I there's a lot to say, so I won't read through all of it just for the aspects of time. But it's always great to have people's opinions sent to us. We really appreciate it. So, you know, you guys listen to us talking a lot about Formula One. And so if you have anything you want to say and want to bring up on the live on there or anything, just tweet whatever you want. Just get in touch. Do let us know. There's plenty of ways to get in touch with us. Best place to start is probably Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. Here you will find the full edition of this podcast, which includes the Of the Weekend Awards, the Norfolk Notebook, and the NRF1 Pit Stops. If you're listening to us on Patreon right now, they are coming up shortly. On all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the big three, handle for all three of those is @TheNRF1. And you can email us your thoughts and thoughts and opinions as well. That address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
We'll move forwards, and we need to touch quickly on the news, because it was announced just before the Imola Grand Prix that we're heading to Miami. They've got a circuit going around the, I think it's the NFL stadium there.
That's where we need Ped.
Yeah, Ped will tell us all about it. So I'm sure we'll have him on soon and he'll fill us in. But yeah, we're heading to Miami. I keep seeing people mocking up pictures sort of like the GTA games, like the imagery they use, and put like Formula One on there. I think they look brilliant. But yeah, should be interesting. You excited? Two races in America?
Yeah, I mean, with Liberty and F1, you're kind of expecting at least two races in America. And I mean, F1's been trying to break the F1, or break F1's trying to break into America for years. It's a big place, so it probably deserves two Grand Prix. If it's a good. It's all down to if it's a good racetrack, isn't it? If it's a good racetrack, then it'll be a good addition to the calendar.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully it's not going to be too gimmicky or anything. It should be okay.
And if Will Smith's there as well, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he will be. And of course, we've got the next race. We might as well move on to that, because I think we covered basically the rest of the news. But next race in Portugal. And who would you say it's the most important weekend for?
Probably the number two drivers at Mercedes and Red Bull.
Yeah, I think they're both due a result, aren't they?
Yeah, Perez, obviously his qualifying was good, wasn't it? And you thought, wow, that's quite a big statement if you can back that up on a Sunday, which unfortunately you didn't. With a spin, and then just didn't go well with it. Probably them two.
Yeah.
How about you, Rich?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, to be honest. I think Bottas really needs to remind people why he's a Mercedes driver. And I think, like you say, Perez, he could do with a good result in the race, just to show that he's not just another number two Red Bull driver. And that you can achieve something, because it's been a while since they've had anyone do that seat justice, really. Yeah. So, it'll be interesting. Who do you think will be on top? Obviously, we're expecting Mercedes and Red Bull to still be there. Which one do you think will be faster?
I've been trying to work that out after the first two races. Everybody's sort of saying Red Bull just, aren't they, at the moment? And Mercedes are saying that. But I think Mercedes is quite happy to say that at the moment. I probably would say, I think Red Bull. I think it should suit them. But it's a hell of a track, isn't it?
Oh, it really is.
It was a As I said earlier, MotoGP was at the weekend. It's just bikes, cars. It's just a brilliant track.
it's exactly what you want. It's that kind of. It's got the change in altitude as you go around.
Yeah.
You know, it's got that the different mix of corners, a good long straight. You know, a good turn one as well. That's always the important thing, yeah. I think, at a racetrack.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting. Also, be interesting if it's hot. If that, because it's quite cool in Imola, if that we see more from the difference between the two cars at the front. But I would say Red Bull, but you can't write off Mercedes, can you?
Yeah, well, that's it, and that's the important thing. Obviously, referring to last year at the beginning of the race, the track was kind of greasy, wet, like you mentioned about tires not really working, and it kind of rained at the beginning. And I watched the highlights of it earlier, and there was cars everywhere at the start of the race.
When Kimi overtook like five or six cars, didn't he?
He was fifth or sixth place at the beginning of the race, and Carlos Sainz was took the lead on lap three, maybe.
Yeah,
but it could be a good, and I think wet races always get us all excited. Do you think the weather might have an impact again?
Hopefully, maybe a wet qualifying actually that'll spice up the grid for them.
Yeah,
or maybe rain halfway through the race. So dry start and rain later on, that's always good.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But I know we always think of when it rains. We always mocked Bernie when he came up with the sprinkler idea. But wet weather does create good races, doesn't it?
It does. I'll tell you something actually. I've just googled Portimao weather, and the temperatures are looking okay, kind of 20, 21, 22. Now this goes up until next Wednesday because it's 7 days, which is of course 2 days before it's due to start the race weekend. This weather, it's showing a high percent chance of precipitation, according to Google. It's about 70% chance through the day. Yeah, between 40 and 70% chance of rain during the day, and potentially higher. So even some thunderstorms it's showing on there. So we could well be on for...
You never know, yeah.
Yeah, we could well be on for an absolute banger of a race. Which, I mean, when was the last time you had you'd probably have to say 2012 again, when we had a Formula 1 season where it's so close and we going into race weekends, we didn't know who was going to win it.
Yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, sort of, the Ferraris gave it a good go two seasons ago, didn't they? But, But yeah, the fact that there was sort of a fair way ahead, but the pack does seem a lot closer. Like I said, McLaren and Ferrari have made the big step-ups, and if there's a few conditions around, you never know, McLaren or Ferrari winner.
That would be something to see. I'd love to see McLaren back up there and and win a race. It's been a long time.
Even chucking a Fernando up there as well.
Oh, why not?
A few dodgy conditions to get onto up there. Proper race.
Well, that's it. Sometimes, as we all know, it's not it's not always about being the fastest. It's about finishing. So if the rain kicks in and it's like that, then it could well be that situation where those kind of older drivers who can just keep it on the track can really make it. So fantastic. We'll see. I'm looking forward to this one now after looking at that weather. I mean, not that I wasn't looking forward to it anyway, but it's going to be an exciting one. So awesome. I think with that, I think we're done. So we will return with E278, which will be our Portuguese Grand Prix review. And trying to stick too many G's in there. in the meantime, thank you, Carl, for joining me. It's been a good one tonight.
Yeah, cheers, Rich. Yeah, been good to catch up.
Oh, it has been, and been an enjoyable one, looking back and looking ahead at Formula 1. It's been great. Thank you, of course, everybody, for listening. And like we said earlier, do get in touch and let us know your thoughts and things, just social media and all that. Just reach out, drop us a message. We'll make sure we read it. And you might even get a little shout-out on the pod as well. But for now, this has been the NRF Off Podcast. We'll see you next time. Till then, goodbye.